Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It was a Hall of Fame day, not a Hall of Flame day, though I kind of feel like those are more fun. That's just me, though. Don't take my word for it. You're welcome to have your own opinion. Hall of Fame, Hall of Flame. If you never heard the story behind the Hall of Flame and where it came from, it's actually kind of funny. But it makes me look like an idiot, so I don't know that I'll tell it right this second. Happy Hump Show to you. It's good to see you through my mind's eye. It's good to know you're out there listening. I'm excited about the fact that we've got major news stories coming from, well, baseball, of course, because we've got the latest class to welcome to Cooperstown. Also, major news in football, the Chiefs make a change. And I can't help but wonder if the last game of the Chiefs season had gone differently, would the decision have been different? So that's an interesting question. It's a game that we can play in sports. We can play the what-if game. Hypothetically, we'll never really have the answer. But still, just the what have you done for me lately, it's so prominent in sports that in a situation like this, in the aftermath of a game with so much disappointment, a game ripe with disappointment, why can I not log into my Twitter account? Maybe I've been sabotaged. Oh my gosh, wait, can you hold on to? Oh, I probably shouldn't say my Twitter handle out loud. There we go. Shoot, because it would be really cool if actually I couldn't log into Twitter. That would be fun. Okay, back on track, though. This whole element of sports where life comes at you fast and what have you done for me lately? And yeah, you think about how a stop here, a fourth down there, a penalty here, a lack of a penalty there can really change the course and kind of as turning points, they cannot alter so much. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Quicken Loans studios, national mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. We didn't have a chance to get to our TD of the week on our last show, so we're going to throw that up there. You know how much we love da polls around here. And it's going to be hard to top the game-winning touchdown in overtime for the New England Patriots, but there were, in fact, other touchdowns. I mean, maybe we could just put the one. That would be kind of funny. I've always thought it would be hysterical to put a poll up with just one option. Anyway, so TD of the week will do, and Ask Amy Anything, which is our hump show staple. And you know what? We never heard back from the guy who won our Survivor pool. So he was the last remaining survivor on Survivor Island, and we never heard from him. I got tweets from him telling me, I won. And then we tried to reach out to him. He never responded. So unfortunately, he's not able to join us on this edition of Ask Amy Anything. But you have the deck cleared for your questions. So you can get those started now on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We've also got NBA news that we'll get to. Not huge news, but you know, we're not that far away from the trade deadline in the NBA. And we had kind of touched on it a little bit last night with Melo getting moved from Houston to Chicago, but knowing that they're really using him as a bargaining chip if they can. Now, I don't know how many teams out there are going to bite, but it was really the first time that I thought about the NBA trade deadline. And now we've got some other news around the deadline regarding some all-stars in the league in the Western Conference. And so we'll get to that as well. If you missed my farting in yoga story, not me. That sounded funny. I had to be careful when I tweeted about that on Tuesday because I was worried that people would think I was the one farting in yoga. Nope. Negative Ghost Rider. But for those of you who don't listen to the last hour of the show, I think you will like the story. So I thought because of the reaction I got the first time, and I'm not kidding you, I didn't make this stuff up. I just, these things happened to me. It had to be the guy on the mat next to me, right? Anyway, so I'll share that story with you guys just because it's hump show and we all need a little mirth in our lives. And then finally, I just have to say thank you again for those donations that you've made to Special Olympics in honor of me plunging into the Chesapeake Bay in frigid cold water. I actually got my final deets on Tuesday. So the last planning phone call and here's where I have to be and here's what I should wear and here's what I can expect. And everything leading up to the plunge, the Maryland State Police have been so kind to me and trying to make this as easy and seamless as possible, and the Special Olympics partnership and making sure we can do our show from Baltimore and 105.7 The Fan, and that will happen on Friday morning. It's the first time I've done a show from Baltimore, so I've been at, you know, in D.C. in the Metro before at our D.C. affiliate, but not in Baltimore, so I'm looking forward to that. And Rob Long said he would bring breakfast. Anyway, there's going to be a lot of company in studio at this point. One, two, three, four different people are coming to say hello or to be part of the show while we're in studio in Baltimore. So that'll be kind of fun. It'll be a chorus of voices and preparation for next week when we take the show on the road to Atlanta. We're in the process of building that schedule as well. But we'll be doing Friday's show from Baltimore and then next Tuesday, well, I guess I said Friday because it's Friday Baltimore time. And when we go on the road to Atlanta, of course, we're going to be working on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The shows start Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, and then go into the next morning. So it's all about when you listen. The security guard downstairs every single night when I walk in, even if it's before midnight Eastern time, he says to me, "Good morning." Oh, no, it grates on me. I don't know why it annoys me so much. It's not morning. If I had not been to bed yet, it's not morning. And yet it could be before midnight. And the guy's like, "Good morning." And I tried the first couple of times just to, you know, to indicate to him that I didn't think that was cool. You know, he still happily says good morning every time I walk in. And so, for me, it's still Tuesday night. And Wednesday morning will come quickly because I haven't finished my NFL column yet. So a lot to do here in the final days before Super Bowl week, and we head to Atlanta. Again, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk about one Serena Williams who just suffered another really painful defeat. When last we saw Serena on the major stage, the Grand Slam stage, what did we see? This is going back to the U.S. Open, where she and the chair umpire have a difference of opinion, and she ends up losing her mind and losing a match, the championship to Naomi Osaka. Well, Serena looked to be on a crash course, a rematch of sorts with Osaka at the Australian Open. In fact, she was up 5-1 in the last set. So she'd split sets with her opponents. This is quarterfinals, Carolina Pliskova. And they split the first two sets, and Pliskova is facing a match point. So she's down 5-1. And in case you don't know, you need six games clear. You have to win by two games for the most part. So if you're at a 5-1 deficit, well, then you better fight your way back big time, right? But the odds are not in your favor. And Serena is serving on a match point. She's serving. She's one of the toughest, most physical, ferocious servers in the game. And she foot faults on her first serve, not on her second. So we're not talking about a double fault or a lost point or anything like that. But she foot faults. So now she's facing a second serve, but still match point against Pliskova. And as they're playing out this point, which had a couple of rallies, it wasn't extremely long, but maybe three or four hits, she's on the baseline and she twists her ankle. And she ends up hitting a ball into the net. And at that point, we didn't know at the time, but it would start this awful downward spiral. And her sprained ankle would become much more of a problem than at the time she even wanted to admit. In fact, she didn't call for a trainer after she sprained her ankle on that dubious point.
I really hate calling the trainer out, to be honest. And at that point, I didn't feel like I needed it or I didn't feel like it would be a big deal. So I just kept going.
So there she is, 1 point away from moving on to the Australian Open semifinals, but she drops the game. Now, she's still up 5-2 in the final set. And she had three more match points. But instead of closing out any one of those match points, she drops six games in a row. I mean, that's extraordinary. Yes, it happens to everyone in tennis at some point or another. Tennis is very much a momentum game. It's also very much a mental game and the confidence. And what have we seen in some of these matches with Serena Williams? The biggest matches on the biggest stages in the last few majors is that there have been these moments when it's been the mental part of the game that's failed her. Now, granted, her body type is different since she came back from having her daughter. And I admire her so much for doing that. And for the most part, she's done what very few women could do or would even attempt to do. But yet here's another hit. Another psychological blow, if you will, which maybe then shakes her confidence. She'd won 14 straight Grand Slam singles quarterfinals before losing to Pliskova. You have to go back to 2013 in Australia, the last time she lost in a major quarterfinal. But think about her recent exits in majors. Remember the Wimbledon final loss to Angelique Kerber? Now, she hadn't been back for very long. Okay, so she was still recovering. And the fact that she had made it to the final was huge, but she lost. Then that whole U.S. Open final debacle in New York where there's booing and she's accusing the chair umpire of discriminating against her because she's a female. She throws her racket. She gets warned. I mean, all this stuff that just kind of blew up. Meanwhile, poor Osaka, who wins her first major, idolizes Serena and is a basket case. And so it was awful for both women. And now today's ankle twist and sprain and this collapse versus Pliskova. Now, you can't call it an upset as much as you know Serena Williams, and she's the draw, right? I mean, she was going for her eighth title. And she's the reason why people watch. But she was seeded 16. And I think Pliskova is 7. So it's not as though this was an upset. Just, we're not used to this. We're not used to Serena Williams losing in the quarterfinals of any major. And definitely not when she's standing on 1, 2, 3, 4 match points. And doesn't close out any of them.
Naturally, I thought, all right, here we go. She's going to win one of these. But that clearly didn't happen. But I was just trying at that point.
I mean, what are you supposed to say? There's only so much you can say. She was obviously emotional on the court. But this all snowballs. She's a pretty emotional player. We know that to be sure. And yet she's got so much experience. I mean, think of her as the Tom Brady of tennis. There isn't anything that she hasn't experienced or encountered on the tennis court. She is, in fact, the GOAT. And certainly, after having her baby and being at 37 years old, where, I mean, this is not a female thing. It's not an athlete thing. It's just a human thing. Your body just does not respond the same from injuries to training, from the type of, let's be honest, trauma that she put it through and having a baby. And again, for her to get back to this level where she's even competing for Grand Slams is phenomenal. But it's also an adjustment for her because this kind of stuff never used to happen. She was always the strongest, both mentally and physically. She was always the one with the killer instinct. So like a Tiger Woods, intimidating to stare at her across the net. But what did I just say earlier about sports? Life comes at you fast, and it can change in a heartbeat. So instead of winning or pursuing her record-tying 24th Grand Slam title, Pliskova will move on to the semifinals. She's attempting to win her first ever major. It's interesting how the landscape in women's tennis has completely opened up since Serena stepped away for what is far more important in having her daughter. She'd been dominant and on top for so long that it's almost strange. It's hard for me sometimes to watch tennis and to think about it. We just got used to that. And now it's wide open. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. But if you want to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, you can do that after our CBS. And then our Facebook page, too. Brand new class for Cooperstown, including Mariano Rivera with his special place in history. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Mariano is set to go. And here's the 2-2. Strike three is called. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
We, Metallica, took a vote here, and it's unanimous. Congratulations from the entire Metallica family, Mariano, on your induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
It's well deserved, and we look forward to watching you enter the hall this summer.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
How awesome is that? Of course, Metallica Sandman being the song of choice whenever Mariano Rivera, the greatest closer in baseball history, would enter the game. And before that, John Sterling on the Yankees Radio Network. And while I can't attest to the fact that he called all 625 saves, I'd be willing to bet there were one or two that he did not. He called the majority of them, and that became a familiar ending for Yankees games over and over. Across 19 seasons, 625 saves, the most all time. And another piece of history for one Mariano Rivera. He's the first baseball player ever to receive a unanimous welcome into the Cooperstown, or into Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame. Pretty awesome, right? And as I thought about it on Tuesday, waiting for the results, I really did think about who in the world would not vote for Mariano Rivera. Now, remember, Ken Griffey Jr. was 99.3%, so he was the closest that any baseball player had gotten. I don't think you can look in the mirror and make a case for how Mariano is not a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I'm glad that no one tried. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you want to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, you can do that with our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page named After the Show. 425 ballots up, 425 ballots down. Count them. A unanimous welcome. I love it. And Rivera is a player that epitomizes class, grace, professionalism. It's what I always appreciated about him, as well as that core group of Yankees. Now, granted, there was emotion. Jorge Posada, for instance, an emotional player, could be really fiery. There are definitely the ups and downs, and we saw that core group of Yankees go through it over and over. Derek Jeter and then Andy Pettit. It's kind of the four that Rivera talks about, and they consider themselves to be forever twined as teammates and as Yankees. So they're known. You think of one, you think of the other. They're known as a group, as a posse. And I think all of them really epitomized what it meant to be a New York Yankee, what it meant to wear pinstripes, not just the winning tradition, but understanding it's a privilege to have that kind of pressure. And he embraced it. And not only did he embrace it, but he thrived. So congratulations to Mariano.
It was a beautiful long career with, to me, the best organization there is in baseball, the New York Yankees, and end up with this like that. It's amazing.
So Rivera, on his career, in which he spent all 19 seasons, so essentially two decades of his life with the Yankees, MLB Network, with all of this post-Cooperstown announcement, and then the reactions. Something else that I had to remember about Mariano, it's been a while since we saw him on a mound, the number that he wore, number 42, last player in Major League Baseball who will ever wear number 42. And he was grandfathered in. Jackie Robinson's number was retired, and so no other player can wear it. But he was wearing it at the time that baseball made this proclamation. And so because of that, he will get to wear number 42 for his induction. So number 42 will be immortalized in baseball lore and in the Hall of Fame in more ways than one.
I assume there was the first number 42 elected. And me being the last player to wear number 42 and being elected to the Hall of Fame unanimous, it's amazing.
I appreciate that so much. I mean, there's so much significance and history. There's so much more than just baseball that's captured in the number 42. You don't even have to be a diehard fan to recognize everything that number means. And what Jackie Robinson went through, even if we've only heard it through stories and secondhand accounts. But that number was retired on April 15th, 1997. It was the 50th anniversary of when Jackie Robinson played his first game in the majors. And what an honor for Mariano Rivera to not only be the last guy to wear it, but to now carry it to its rightful resting place, so to speak, in the Hall of Fame. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Even as we had the excitement over Rivera and Mike Mussina, who is, of course, a Orioles and Yankees pitcher for his 270 wins and more than 2,800 strikeouts. Edgar Martinez in his final year on the ballot. That's amazing. He was a Mariner his entire career. And so we'll let you hear from the others. There was also a bittersweet moment from the president of the Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson.
Our next Hall of Famer used electric stuff to win, win, and win again. It's with a heavy heart, but also with great joy to welcome pitching great Roy Halladay into the Hall of Fame. Doc pitched for 16 seasons in Toronto and Philadelphia, winning 66% of his decisions, 20th best in history, posting three seasons with 20 wins and two more with 19. He was a power pitching workhorse who had five 200 strikeout seasons on his impressive resume, and he logged 200 or more innings eight times. Doc led his league in complete games seven times, and his career total of 67 are the most in baseball since his debut 21 years ago in 1998. He was an eight-time All-Star, two-time Cy Young Award winner, and the author of two no-hitters, both in 2010 for the Phillies, a perfect game in May that year, and then another no-hitter 5 months later in the National League Division Series. Brandy, Ryan, and Braden, I know you're proud. Congratulations. Your husband and father will now forever be remembered in Cooperstown.
Obviously bittersweet because Roy Halladay died last year in a plane crash. And his family is mentioned there, his wife and his two kids, their two kids. And so it's beyond sad, it's beyond tragic that this happens after he's gone. But a neat honor for his wife and for the family. I can imagine what that induction ceremony will be like, how emotional it will be. And I remember talking about this. Actually, I remember being on the radio when it happened, but I remember talking about it when he died. It's one of my favorite memories of the baseball postseason in my career. So not so much as a fan, but as a member of the sports media. when I was at my previous network, I was a studio host for Major League Baseball games, including that game on October 7th, Doctober, not Brocktober, Doctober 2010, when Roy Halladay made his postseason debut. And all the excitement about that, remember? Because he had been all those years with Toronto and had never made a postseason appearance. He'd never pitched. And not only was he being deprived, but we were deprived as fans. And so he makes his debut, and what does he do? He tosses a no-hitter. And I can remember, if I'm not mistaken, it was the very first game of the 2010 postseason. I feel like not only was he the starter, he was the number one guy for the Phillies, but it was also the very first game of the playoffs. And he gives up just one walk. That was to Jay Bruce in the fifth inning. And there we begin that march. Sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning. And in my studio, so it was me and a couple of producers, but because we had the audio and because we were carrying the game, people would stop by, they would stand outside, they'd be watching. This was in the hallway at my previous network, and they'd be watching through the windows. And we were so nervous. We wanted it so badly for him because he had waited so long. And it was such a cool moment when he finally wraps up the no-hitter. And there's a wild celebration amongst the Phillies, but we were jumping up and down and we were screaming and we were yelling like little kids, just being excited in this incredible postseason moment in Major League Baseball. So I will never forget that, being a part of it in a unique way as a member of the media. So congratulations to Mariano Rivera and Mike Mussina and Roy Halladay's family. And then Edgar Martinez, who was nervous before the announcement was made. You'll hear from him coming up as well. In his final year of eligibility, the team and the Mariners fan base made a huge push that may very well have gotten him over the hump. Plus, what happened to the PED crowd? How did they fare in the latest Hall of Fame voting? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The toughest guy I ever faced, I think, has to be Edgar Martinez. He'll make me throw at least 13 fastballs above 95. You know, I'll be hard breathing after that.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
My favorite, Pedro Martinez, also a Hall of Famer. Hola, Pedro! On MLB Network, describing Edgar Martinez, it's Hump Show. I need more grace on Hump Show. Describing Edgar Martinez as the toughest hitter he ever faced. And finally, in his last year on the ballot, can you just imagine, put yourself in his shoes, if you possibly can, final year on the ballot, he had received just 27% of the vote 4 years ago. That was just 4 years ago. And back then, in 2015, it had to feel like an extremely remote possibility, a total long shot that he would get into the Hall of Fame. And in this final year, the Mariners and the fan base, of whom he is so beloved, they decided, we're going to do everything we possibly can to, I don't know how you push voters, I don't know how you sway voters, but everything about Edgar Martinez that would make him deserving of the Hall of Fame, you highlight it, and you see if you can make this about name recognition, make this about the voters having all the possible information and kind of swaying them by accentuating the positive. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you toll-free by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. So before I move on to Edgar, I knew I was going to do this. It's actually now 2019, and when I said Roy Halladay died last year, I was still 2018 Amy, so forgive me for that. I haven't written 2019 on any of my, I haven't written 2018 on any of my checks yet, but I just had a moment where I forgot we were in a new year. So yes, Roy Halladay died in the plane crash in 2017, so that would be roughly a year and a half ago. As for Edgar Martinez, if you haven't seen the video in which he got the call, it's really cool. I mean, you can almost see his nerves evident on his face, but the smile when he finally gets that invitation and realizes, I made it.
I have nervous energy, so I have to go and work out and try to get rid of that nervous energy. But yeah, it is. When you're expecting something like this, of this magnitude, it just works in your mind pretty much all day.
MLB Network with the reaction from Martinez. He stayed in Seattle and was a franchise icon, of course, for that reason. It's a market that hasn't been to the playoffs since, what, 2001? And there has been an exodus from other stars. And I don't begrudge them this, but Ken Griffey Jr. didn't finish his career there. Randy Johnson, Alex Rodriguez, they both started their careers there. Martinez wanted to stay. And I wonder sometimes if that's the path that Felix Hernandez will take or if he will eventually leave. Now, I'm a huge fan of King Felix, but I so desperately want to see him pitch on the postseason stage too, so I'm kind of torn. But Martinez knew what he wanted. He didn't want to go anywhere else. He won a pair of batting titles, and he hit more than 300 home runs over his 18 seasons. And this is kind of neat. I mean, if you think about the fact that he was on the ballot for the very last time, you kind of get the age as well as the time span here. But he's one of just a half dozen players who started their careers after World War II and retired with a 300 batting average, a 400 on-base percentage, and a 500 slugging percentage. So in other words, consistency. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Mike Mussina, 18 seasons himself, 10 with the Orioles, 8 with the Yankees. And I hope people don't forget those days when he was wearing the black and orange. 5-time All-Star, 7 Golden Gloves, never won a Cy Young, but has, again, a record of consistency. An ERA that's south of 3.7 over his career, more than 2,800 strikeouts. And I think there was a debate about whether or not Mussina was a Hall of Famer. It's kind of interesting that the others who got in were first-round draft picks. He was not. He was an 11th-round pick. He's the epitome of workhorse and taking an opportunity and turning it into a career. A guy who you knew was going to be prepared and was going to go out there and not ever just rest on his laurels, so to speak. He never took it for granted. So he was 11th round pick out of high school. Then he went to Stanford, and that kind of changed his path. He went back into the draft and became a first-round pick. So his path is totally different than the other guys who ended up being marked as superstars, right? He took a different path and went to college, and that then helped him and gave him the experience that he needed. And from Mussina, I always thought of him as a workhorse and a guy that was kind of steady Eddie. Wasn't the flashiest, wasn't the strongest, wasn't necessarily going to blow you away, but really smart on the mound, really smart. And, of course, the question becomes, which hat will you wear in Cooperstown?
I started my career in one place and had a lot of success, and I finished my career in the other place and had a lot of success. So I'm just, you know, it's I've played played for both organizations. I'm proud to have played for both organizations. But there's no way I could pick one over the other.
Huh. Well, then what do? Do you have a specially designed hat with an Oriole cut, like, kind of cut off in the middle and then half of the Yankees logo? I think in some circles that would be considered sacrilege. Okay, let's talk about the PED guys. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, who, of course, have been accused of steroids. They continue to inch forward in their quest to make the Hall of Fame. Up from 57.3% and 56.4% to roughly 2% higher, 2.5% higher for each. Okay, so 59.5% and 59.1% for Clemens and Bonds, respectively. They each have 3 years left on the ballot. Curt Schilling, who is not about the PEDs, but is about, well, he's about a lot of things. He doesn't play nicely with others. And not only has he made some public enemies, picked some public fights, he's also been disrespectful, and some of the choices he's made, they've hurt him. Regardless of where your politics are, the way that he's handled himself publicly has really tarnished his image. And so now when you think about Schilling, you don't necessarily think about amazing pitcher. You don't think about bloody sock. You don't think about World Series winner. You think about all the other crap that's kind of swirled around him since he retired. And a lot of it he brought on himself. So Schilling is now up to nearly 61% of the vote. So those three guys are getting closer, but they're not quite there yet. If you're wondering about Manny Ramirez, he had 23% of the vote. Andy Pettit, not even 10%. Sammy Sosa, not even 9%. And you know who I don't see here unless I'm completely missing it? I don't see Mark McGwire. Did I forget that he dropped off the ballot? Or does he not even have enough votes to register? Because I don't see him right now among the PED crowd. Gary Sheffield, 13.5%. Roy Oswalt, I haven't heard that name in a really long time. Four people out there felt as though he were deserving of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Placido Polanco, 2 votes. I mean, you're saying there's a chance. It's our hump show. Send your questions for Ask Amy to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS at CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.